This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. With all the uproar about Ebola, we've become more and more sensitive to the global nature of infectious diseases. No longer are we immune to diseases that begin halfway around the world. Dengue fever is one such disease. It's a viral infection usually found in the tropics that affects more than 50 million people worldwide each year, and it's returned to the continental U.S. And to date, there is no cure. Joining us with more on this is Dr. Mark Polemis, Director of the Center for Global Health and Translational Science at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Polemis. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So first, help us understand, what exactly is this disease, dengue fever? I know it's also called breakbone fever. Tell us about it.
It is breakbone fever. So dengue is a virus that spread from human to human through the mosquito. It's in the same family as West Nile. It's historically thought of a disease that's outside the United States, but has slowly been creeping its way back into the United States. It's a disease that doesn't have a lot of mortality with it, not a lot of death, but it causes sickness, which is usually characterized as severe pain behind the eyes, headaches, very high fevers, and joints and muscles aching so badly that it got the name breakbone fever.
How serious is it, though? What's the prognosis for people who get it?
The vast majority of people who get the disease recover. It's an interesting disease because the first time you get it, about 50% of the people that get the disease don't have any symptoms. The other 50% get what's called breakbone fever. But the second time you get the disease, if you get a separate serotype.
So there's more than one strain of the disease. I think I recalled that.
There are four strains of the disease, and then they've labeled them nicely, dengue 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Makes it easy.
The first time you get an infection, about 50% of the time, you're asymptomatic. You have no symptoms. The other 50% of the time, you have breakbone fever with the headaches and the fever and the eye pain and the joint pain and muscle pain, maybe a little bit of bleeding of the gums. The second time you get an infection, if you get one of the other serotypes of dengue, a small percentage of those can go on to severe dengue, which can be dengue hemorrhagic fever or bleeding.
So then it becomes much more serious.
Much more serious.
So is it if they get a different serotype or if they get the same serotype?
A different serotype. So if you're protected against the same serotype.
Because your body's already mounted an immune response to the first one. But if you should be infected with the second one, is it that the body also, is it something to do with the fact that the body's immune response is much more virulent or more intense?
It's an immune response to the second infection that actually causes the complications of it. So it presents after you become afebrile, after your fever breaks, and after the virus goes away in the blood, that's when you get severely sick in the second infection with malaria.
So basically, if you're not on the second one, generally prognosis is short-term illness, and you may or may not know you've had it unless you've had this severe breakbone fever, is what you're saying. And there's not much they can do about it, isn't it? Just palliative, giving Tylenol, keeping them symptomatically comfortable, that kind of thing?
That's correct. In the first infection, far less than 1% of the of patients go on to severe disease. So way more than 99% of the patients just have a disease that comes and goes, kind of like a very severe flu kind of symptoms. The second time you get the infection, though, even those folks in the right hands have a very, very low death rate. So in areas of the world where dengue is common with fluid rehydration and care, it's not a disease of death. But there is no specific pill to treat it. It's through supportive care with control of the fevers and the fluid shifts and the bleeding.
So at this point, we really don't have a cure or a way to even prevent it.
Correct.
You're basically, if you're in the environment, so let's get back to this. So it's transmitted via mosquito. It's not human to human.
Correct. It has to be a mosquito.
Mosquito to human. Okay. And where do the mosquitoes get the disease?
From another human.
Okay. So the mosquito is the vector.
Correct.
And so it does go human to human, but via the mosquito.
Correct.
In a sense.
Human to mosquito to human.
Human to mosquito to human. Wow. So I mean, it's now in the United States, and it had been eliminated from the United States. Is that something, I mean, should we be worried about it?
We should be worried about it. So dengue fever is, it's an emerging infection. There are more infections now than there were 10 years ago.
Really?
So while the rest of the world is working at controlling malaria and HIV and tuberculosis and all of these other diseases where we start to see we've turned the corner, dengue is the opposite. It's giving more infections now.
Do we know why?
We do. It's multifactorial, but the vector is in a lot of places. And so what we've seen is that it's probably that the virus is now catching up with the vectors. So it's the spread of people through humans, spread of people through air travel.
Global nature of our world. That it's being disseminated. But why increase? Why is there, I mean, just because you're saying it's being moved to different areas, it has more of an opportunity to expand or grow.
Well, the multifactorial part is that there is no way to stop the disease in a person, right? You have to prevent the mosquito bite or eliminate the mosquito is the only way to reduce the disease.
Is that akin to malaria in a way?
I mean, there's some overlapping issues with all of the diseases of the developing world that are vector borne. But it's probably closer to the story of West Nile. West Nile came to the United States on the East Coast, and then has quickly covered the entire United States. So dengue is in the same family as West Nile, and now has crept into the United States. Likely, unless we can change the outcome, anywhere that there is the mosquito vector in the United States, dengue should be able to spread.
Haven't there been real efforts at one point, though? I mean, you and I are going to talk more about the medical end of it, but haven't there been more efforts of late to try to control those mosquito populations? I mean, the mosquito abatement, for want of a better term, in terms of standing water and all of that kind of thing.
But there have been huge efforts in the United States as well as around the world. And getting people under mosquito nets at night has been a huge issue. This is primarily a day-biting mosquito, however, so it's...
That's problematic.
It's not as prone to help from mosquito nets. And insect repellents are not used widely throughout the developing world, whereas they are in the United States. The developing world does not have closed houses with screens on there and air-conditioned units. And the stripe through the middle of the around the equator, where you have this kind of tropical climate all year round, is where the vast majority of the dengue is. And then there may be a component of global warming as that tropical stripe widens to take in more portions of the North America, South America, et cetera, the mosquito may be able to move with it.
There are more welcoming places for the mosquito to live. So you're saying should we be worried in Central New York then?
Interestingly, there was a confirmed case of dengue in Long Island.
Really?
That's pretty close. Luckily, we do not have the vector here in upstate New York area based on the Department of Public Health's mosquito screenings. So from that perspective, we're safer than some areas. But any place the vector is potential for the disease.
And if it's as close as Long Island, you never, as we said, I think the one thing that I am so aware of these days is that it's only a plane ride away. It's no longer the kind of thing where if you're in one part of the world, you really can feel safe because people are traveling, as we saw with Ebola, and bringing things to our shores that we never would have dreamt have been here. So now you're very involved in a brand new trial for a vaccine or a way to evaluate new dengue vaccines. Tell us about your efforts.
So to date, there is no FDA-approved vaccine to prevent dengue. And Dr. Tim Endy, who's the director of the Infectious Disease Division, and I have been working on vaccines for years.
He's here at Upstate.
He's here at Upstate, and he's been working in dengue vaccines for years.
And I might add, he himself was infected with dengue. We had him visiting. We had him on the show once, and he talked about his own experience with dengue.
So he's a true talent in the field. And over the past couple of years, we've evaluated two of the promising dengue vaccines. And the development effort is very, very long. It takes decades and millions and millions of dollars.
Why does it take so long?
Well, one of the issues is that there is no animal model for dengue.
What does that mean?
So we cannot give dengue to an animal and have them both have the virus circulating in their blood and be symptomatic. We cannot give a human dengue infection to an animal.
So animals do not get dengue?
Not the human forms.
Not the human form
that we're
trying to test.
We're trying to get the vaccine on.
So not we even have, mice, the classic mice.
No. So there's no way to test our vaccines. We don't have any way to know if the vaccine works until we get it into humans.
Wow.
And it's not just the only way to test efficacy is you give a vaccine to somebody and then you have them bitten by the mosquito that gives them dengue, and then if it works. If you've protected them, that's how you tell. But you can only do that in very large studies in areas of the world that have dengue. And so that takes years and years to get through the multiple small trials to ensure it's safe first and then move them into larger and larger trials out into the developing world.
Isn't there also the danger, though, of infecting people? I mean, is there a certain kind of medical, ethical issue in terms of or not necessarily medical legal, because obviously people will agree to do this, I would think, to participate. But, I mean, I know many, many, many years ago in the history of infectious diseases, many scientists infected themselves to find the answers to these things. But times are different now. So how do you manage that?
Well, many of the development efforts for diseases that we know well have used a human infection model. So, for instance, malaria has been developing vaccines and drugs. They've been testing them, their efficacy early on through the use of human infection models. They've been doing it for more than 20 years. The influenza vaccine that everyone has received has probably been developed through the use of an influenza model. And historically,
so this is not new.
This is not new. They're for diarrheal illnesses. It goes on and on and on. But there's never been one developed for dengue, and that's what we're trying to do now.
Tell us more about it, because I don't want to run out of time.
Okay, so there is a dengue virus that has been made by all the exact same quality standards that you would for a vaccine. And what we're working with the Department of Defense and the FDA and a number of partners around the United States is to see if we can use this this vaccine candidate, this live attenuated dengue virus, to test vaccines. So what we're doing initially is in very small groups of healthy adults, we'll inoculate them with this dengue virus and follow them their course. If they develop a mild form of dengue consistently across a couple of studies, then we probably be able to use this to test dengue vaccines in the future.
So you're basically creating a dengue virus to use and injecting it into people as a way of testing whether a vaccine will work.
That's the ultimate goal. But what it is there's a dengue virus that has been attenuated, meaning it's been weakened.
It's not as virulent, altered. Right.
So it's not as
harmful
as a regular dengue virus. And we know that dengue, in its own right, causes sickness, but more sickness than death. And so we'll take this attenuated virus and then evaluate it. Our goal is to be able to produce an uncomplicated dengue, a mild form of dengue that would be reproducible over multiple trials.
And then use that to test the efficacy of vaccines.
Correct.
So you need people for this trial?
We need people for this trial.
Who are you looking for?
We're looking for healthy adults between 18 and 45 years of age.
Does it matter if male, female, gender?
Does not matter, male or female.
But they have to have no underlying medical issues.
No underlying medical conditions. And we'll be able to help them evaluate that. We'll have a history and take a physical, and we'll do lab work to help help characterize their health. The study has an intense period of about 1 month where they're seen every other day at the clinical trial center and followed up by phone on alternate days. And then if they get sick, we have a section of the community hospital where we'll be able to admit them and follow them and ensure that they're well.
So at this point, do you feel like there's any danger to the participants?
I think that in all clinical trials, there is a level of danger. We shouldn't kid ourselves about that. But this is been done before with dengue. This has been done before with other diseases. This virus is attenuated. And we have multiple safety measures in place to ensure that this goes well without complications.
So how do people get involved if they're interested in being a participant in this whole process?
Well, we have a number of ways we can be contacted. The SUNY Upstate webpage has a link to the Center for Global Health. You can email us at trials, at upstate.edu, as in clinical trials, at upstate.edu. And we're on Facebook at the CGHATS, which is the Center for Global Health and Translational Science.
So great.
You can contact us.
And you're ready to go.
It's been through IRB approval, we're in discussions with the FDA, but we should be recruiting in the next month.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your work and your effort in this regard. It's very exciting. I mean, I think in general, we've made there's so much headway that's been made against infectious diseases in this world, and this is just another chapter in that. So I want to thank you so much for coming in and sharing, and I wish you luck with the trials. My guest has been Dr. Mark Palemas. He's director of the Center for Global Health and Translational Science at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.